Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Lanterne Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nyson. I cannot believe where it's the 13th of March, well, 12th of March, where Benji is, wherever that is, and we're getting cycling this good, not just in one race, but in three separate races on a Friday during the day. And yeah, I feel like we're very lucky. And I'm worried, Benji, that people are going to join. You know, everyone's a hardcore fan pretty much that follows this podcast. But then people will join for the Tour de France in July. And sometimes the Tour de France is not as exciting as Tirreno Adriatico. But and they'll be like, what's all this fuss about? So I just hope it's exciting then for them. But we're lucky today. I just want to give a big shout out to our show partner, Lacole. As you know, the title sponsor for Drops Lacole. That's the third part of this podcast. Three separate YouTube videos, Paris-Nice Stage 6, Tirreno Adriatico Stage 3, and Healthy Aging Tour Stages 2 and 3. Drops Lacole, British Conti team, they overperform. Not even just a meme. They're actually overperforming in the Healthy Aging Tour. They got a rider on 6 on GC. And yeah, they're competing against riders, SD Works, who need no introduction, etc. So if you want to go and check out Lacole's Instagram, they've got a little photo diary and they've got a page on their website about Drops Lacole and them competing at Healthy Aging Tour. We'll have a link to that in the description to their Instagram. But first, Paris-Nice Stage 6. I said in my preview, I got a self plug myself on my own podcast. I said in the preview video that this finishing stage reminded me a lot of the stage to Swansea's in Welter Stage 10 last year. 3,000 meters plus of climbing, 203 kilometers, medium mountain stage with no steep climbs and no climbs lasting longer than about 12 to 14 minutes. Finishes goes from Brignoles to Biot. And the final climb was 2 kilometers at 5.2%. And it reminded me, well, actually, I gotta say the market's got it right, Benji, pretty much for the bundle of riders at the top. But Bennett was the favorite for Swansea Stage 10 last year. But we didn't think that was a good idea because this hard finish. They got Cavagnard in that team. He attacked last year, which we thought was a good move. They got Cavagnard here today to Koenig at Quickstep. We thought Roglic, Matthews, and co. were the favourites for the stage. We said that yesterday. Or even Lutsenko from a break. But, yeah. Actually, speaking of the breakaway, in that break was just Lutsenko, Elizondo, Anthony Perez, Julian Alvarez, Victor Campenaerts, and Jonathan Hivert. Are you surprised there weren't more riders in that break, Benji?
Oh, I'm not sure. I think we expected a bit of a different approach from some riders. I was looking more at a Freiler or something instead of a Lutsenko.
Yeah.
I think Lutsenko was a bit closer in GC, so that's why we budged towards Freiler perhaps. Minutes. Thomas de Gendt, he was also not really there in the breakaway at all, so he seems to be having a bit of a relaxed start of the season, I guess, because we haven't seen him too much in breakaways. I think in UAE Tour we saw him twice, I think, in the breakaway for a tiny bit, but yeah, in the Paris-Nice, it hasn't really been the case. Perhaps in the coming days, we'll see. But yeah, I think I expected other riders, perhaps not more riders.
Yeah, I thought there'd be a few more. And because none of them were threats on GC and none of them were particularly, it wasn't a large group, they were allowed to pretty much do what they wanted for this stage. They got a gap out to 3 minutes and it just stayed like that. They cleaned up all the KOM points. They cleaned up the intermediate sprint seconds, etc. Eventually, Perez and Alvarez were dropped from that group. Elizondo was the strongest of them. Jumbo Visma were pacing behind. And honestly, we thought Roglic was a good chance for this stage. Like, I think we know Roglic is so good at these finishes. So I don't even think Jumbo Visma were just pacing for, I don't know, because they felt obliged to, because they had the leader I think they were also chasing because they thought there were bonus seconds on offer as well. But we'll skip forward now. They're chasing, bring the gap down, gradually, Jumbo-Visma. And Elisonde is then the last rider in that breakaway. He's dropped everyone on this rolling medium mountain parkour. And 15Ks to go. He's got like a 13-second lead. It's dwindling down. We can see that he's about to get caught by the peloton. And it was actually Cofidis. Sorry, Benji. Cofidis were the ones going nuclear on the front on one of those last ascents. And who did you think they were riding for at that point? Because I was confused. It's like Guillaume Martin not punchy enough. Christophe Laporte, a sprinter. They need someone who's like them combined. Like, what do you think their plan was?
I actually thought they were riding for Laporte. And I think we've seen that over the last couple of weeks, that he's been coming forward more and more. Bessage as well, but also in the last couple of years, he's been relatively decent at hilly sprints. He's good at the rougher stages that then end up in a mass sprint. But he's just also a bit inconsistent throughout the season. And I think on the races that really mattered, he never shined through and never achieved what he was hoping for. And I think he is slowly but surely crawling back to the level that I hope that he can ride in for an entire season here, because...
Dude, he's been at top level at Paris-Nice. Yeah. Like, really impressive. I mean, we haven't liked some of his moves, but how many top fives does he have now? Anyway, like, he's riding like a proper... Cofidis are World Tour. They're not Pro Conti anymore. But he's riding really, really well. And I think he should go to the Vuelta, to be honest. But we'll get to that in a second. De Koenig Quickstep came to the front. They're closing Elisonde. Cofidis have done a lot of work because Jumbo-Visma weren't bringing it back quickly enough. And then Jonas Rutsch, the young German for EF Education Nippo. We've seen him. He's a big guy, big engine, like Cavagnard. He attacks at the place I said in the preview, perhaps, that Cavagnard might attack, or Cataneo might have gone in the breakaway. I thought they should have gone on the break, and they didn't. And it was the exact place you would see Cavagnard attacking, where no trains really assembled. If one train commits to chasing, they may burn themselves and leave their rider isolated. This is also a climb where you can lose time on GC if you are out of position or have to do too much work. Do you think were you surprised Cavagnard or no one else joined that Rutsch move?
Yes, because it basically forces the Koenig to keep pedaling in the peloton, because Bennett was still there. And
yeah, they had to keep chasing.
Yeah, they seemed to be going all out for Bennett at that point. And they had, I think, four riders ahead of Bennett at that moment, and they kept on chasing. And if they put Cavagnard on the breakaway, then they're forcing someone else to take over, the likes of a Jumbo or any other team that has interest. Yeah, exactly. So who would have chased? Cofidis again? I don't know. They didn't have too much either left, so... Yeah. It would have been much more difficult for anybody to catch the front group if Cavagnard was with Rutsch, for example.
And no one had full trains.
Like, it's also the kind of perfect stage I would expect a Cavagnard to do this on. I'm really surprised they didn't go for that tactic. I think they started the day saying, if Bennett gets to that point, we're going to ride for him. And perhaps he deserved that after what he's done before. He's already done decent on similar finishes, but this one's like next level, I think, and is not really what I see a Bennett achieving something on. We said it yesterday.
But the stage in the Vuelta, we keep mentioning, Bennett was the favorite, but they still attacked with Cavagnard to put pressure on the other team. So it's not like you have to choose one or the other. If Bennett's good enough, he's good enough, but it allows you to keep that train intact as well by not chasing, as Benji said. Anyway, we'll get to that in a second. We'll maybe dive into that a little bit more afterwards. Rutsch goes, there's this pretty fast, but a pedaling descent going into the finish. He catches poor Kenny Elisonde. He's been in the break for like 3 hours plus. You know, there's about a 40 kilo and 35 centimeter difference between the two riders. They're on a pedaling downhill. And Jonas Rutsch keeps flicking Elisonde through. And Elisonde didn't react. Elisonde was like, are you kidding? If I even could, I'd probably be slowing you down. And we'd lose this 10-second gap very quickly. So... Jonas Rutsch, not the highest IQ plays there. I think he should have just focused on going clear. And like, he was dropping Elisonde on every rise. 4Ks to go, they had a 10-second lead, but this climb was still pretty, I don't know, 10 seconds going to get eaten up very quickly on that climb. Alexander Vlasov had a mechanical, not a crash. He quickly changed his bike with Sobrero. Plus, I was quite a tall guy for a GC contender, like 6'2", I think. But he Sobrero's bike was a little bit small for him, but like in a good way. Like it's better to be slightly too small, I think, changing over than to have a bike too big, which I think Dia Quintana's bike for Nairo looked a bit more uncomfortable the other day. Vlasov quickly got in the convoy on the descent before the climb and got back on, thankfully, for him. I'm not sure. Well, there wouldn't have been a 3 kilometer rule because it was a mechanical. Maybe mechanicals count the 3 kilometer rule. Don't know, Benji. Someone can correct us in the comments. Jonas Rutsch gets mopped up with about 1,500 meters to go. And Bennett's still there. Buani's been dropped. DeMar's been dropped as they hit this climb. And it's Seneschal leading out for Bennett, Benji. But you could see on the front on that Roglic was second wheel, Bennett was third wheel, Matthews Laporte up there, and Bennett was already struggling. We're not talking in like the last 200. It's like the 1,200 meters. So what do you think about Seneschal continuing to pull? And could Seneschal have actually been a chance for this stage, Benji? I've seen him in some races, maybe Dwarsdorhed Hageland, a bit shorter climb, but against MVDP and Wout van Aert, he's not bad on these sort of finishes.
Yeah, he's not bad, but I also don't think he would have a real possibility for himself.
Okay.
If you're in that situation, if you've got Bennett near you, then I feel like it's more likely to ride for Bennett because I feel like he deserved that from what he's done before this season. And if the climb was a bit easier and the tempo on it by the Koenig was lower, then Bennett could have gotten further. And that's where the Cavagna play comes in again. Because let's say Cavagna did go for the attack. Let's say he forced other teams to try and take over to the front. I don't think another team would have closed down the gap to Cavagna by the bottom of the climb. I think that they'd have to pull towards Cavagna on the climb itself. And it wouldn't have been the Koenig doing it. And I'm not sure if the tempo would have been lower or more in
definitely
the peloton.
Lower.
Yeah, I'd no expect it too.
If Seneschal had stopped pulling under the Flamme Rouge, Benji, who would have pulled? Roglic didn't have a teammate. He didn't have a single teammate. He was on his own at that point. There's no Cobrelli for turns. I think Haig might not have been there for turns. It was just Martin and Laporte were the only teams with two riders that I saw.
I think that if that would happen, then Martin would have attacked at that point instead of, well, spoilers, he attacked a tiny bit later into the last kilometer and tried to surprise everybody. Unfortunately for him, that was not ideal. But I feel like it was a great move, I agree. Because what it does is, if Martin moves past everybody in that final section, I think it was the last 400 meters, 450 meters, something like that.
He attacked at 500, yeah. So, sorry, just before then, Seneschal's been pacing. He drops Bennett out of the train. Bennett blows up. It's Roglic, Laporte. Matthews is there on that wheel. Roglic is isolated from like 700, 750. Yeah. And yeah, as you're saying, Benji, Martin attacks at 500. Yeah, why was that good tactically?
It allows Laporte, who was sitting in the wheel of Roglic, to just sit there and basically be led to the finish line by Roglic, while Roglic would have to react to Guillaume Martin, spending energy. We'll go into this as well, a similar tactic in our Tirreno review, in a bit. I think that's going to be the other YouTube video or the same podcast, depending on where you're listening here. But the Martin move basically puts Laporte in the perfect seat. But on the other end, it also puts more pressure onto Laporte. And that's the difficulty with this. You can attack
so
like
Martin.
You think
he should have soft-paced? You think he should have gone on the front, ridden false tempo? Because Laporte's the punchier guy, theoretically, than Roglic?
The thing about it is, I think that if Martin didn't make the move, Laporte would have been much closer to the victory today. Is that a spoiler?
Let's just get it. I'll just say what happened. Roglic closes him down like a long way on his own in the last 500, and then Roglic is just like, you know what, I'll just start sprinting for the win. I don't even care that there's anybody behind me. He's got Laporte, Michael Matthews, the guy that's like the only one of the only people ever to follow Phil Gill on the Cowberg, and who's won the Canadian races with hard climbs in it multiple times. Anyway, still climbing well, but he's got them on his wheel. It isn't the hardest climb. We just thought it was too hard for the pure sprinters. And Roglic, they literally can't even get up to Roglic's back wheel or get out of his draft. Roglic wins easily, towing Laporte and Matthews to the line. Crazy win from him. He's already on insane form. The top 10, Roglic first, Laporte second. Still a lovely performance from Laporte and Cofidis, I think. Matthews third, Dylan Turns, fourth. Aurelien Petitpanthre, fifth. Very nice from him. Lucas Hamilton, sixth. Maybe we've got some Simon Gerrans, Michael Matthews, World Championships issues already with Matthews and Hamilton, Benji. We'll talk about that in a second. Brian Cockard, seventh. Quentin Pacher, eighth. Speaking of those issues, both on B&B Hotel, seventh and eighth. Sergio Henao, ninth. And Chris Newlands, tenth. The Latvian for Israel Startup Nation. Very nice finish for him too. But yeah, Roglic, Benji. We expected it. Like, should we be surprised that he's so good on a finish like this?
Not really after last year's Vuelta. I think you mentioned it at the start already, that stage where Bennett was a favorite in Swanches was basically the stage where we announced the day before, this is never going to happen. No way in hell he's winning this. And it happened like that, and we knew that.
And it's not just Bennett, it's any pure sprinter. Like, yeah. We didn't think Demar or Buani or Bauhaus sort of guys would win either. But yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, that's exactly my thought process. And additionally, I think we mentioned yesterday that we thought Matthews and Roglic would be the people that you'd expect on this kind of finish. But it always surprises me that Matthews seems to be just always missing out a tiny bit. And
I know
it annoys me because you'd expect that he can really pull it off on this kind of finish. It's literally perfect.
And he came third, Benji, on that sprint stage the other day, the pure sprint stage. He came third. And so my rationale, and it played out exactly as I thought it was going to play out, was, okay, I think Matthews is going to be the quickest guy. If you had to rank the riders in the top 10, who are the quickest guys in this top 10? I think I thought he's going to be the quickest guy to make the top 10. And then if you told me he's going to be on Roglic and Laporte's wheel the whole time in the last 400, and Roglic has had to chase down for 500 meters.
Yeah.
And there was just no burst, Benji. He just didn't have that acceleration, which we saw in Shurub. So is that what you were surprised by, that he couldn't come out of the wheel? Because I expected him to win from 300.
Yeah, I expected it to be much closer, at least. I thought that Roglic looked to be in an ideal position in exactly the same way as in that Vuelta stage. So very unpredictable to expect Matthews' capabilities of winning something, because like every single time we say that he can win something, he doesn't.
I know, I didn't expect him to come in top five in any of the bunch sprints, and he came third. Third is not a bad result on a finish like this. I actually do think ultimately Matthews and Magnus Cort's a better example of this. Magnus Cort got dropped, they're better if there's been this climb, they stay with this lead group, and then there's the reduced bunch. What was the stage, Benji, won by? Oh, was it won by Almeida in the Giro, where they all went over the climb? There's like four quick-step riders with Masnada and Conrad sprinting, and Sagan and Ballerini had been dropped. And no, Ulissi won it. It was the second one Ulissi won, not the Agrigento stage. The second stage Ulissi won is where I think Matthews is actually really good. Where it's actually a group of 10, and the sprint is on the flat, and the climb has made the selection.
That's the one where Sagan was behind, right? Where Mike and Conrad or something.
Sagan and Ballerini behind. Yeah. And we were like, extra quick step block. Magnus Cort, much the same. His stage win in the Vuelta last year was the same as a flat sprint. Roglic second still. what about MSR for Matthews, Benji? I still think it's encouraging for him. I think he'll be able to stay. I don't think he'll follow the big boys on Poggio, but if they get caught, big if, I think he'll be pretty good from the group behind.
I think he's in the same situation as every single year, and I think that, he always has an opportunity, but it just never works out, does it? But last year he did come very close, but he also rode into a wall or something in the descent of the Poggio with his hand. Was it last year?
No, he got put into the wall when he was trying to follow Alaphilippe's attack on Poggio.
Oh, okay, yeah. So that's not ideal. So that might have hindered his capabilities of winning. But then again, I don't think he would have been able to follow in any way. The riders that got away. And that's a problem here, I think, for Milano Sanremo in the coming few years, that you've got Vanderpool, Van Aert, Alaphilippe, and always these kind of punchers that can pretty much blow away on the Poggio whilst a Matthews will attempt to hang on. And likely that's not going to work, looking at how how the season has gone so far when it comes to Vanderpool, Van Aert, and Alaphilippe. But yeah. I guess we'll venture into that more once we go over Tirreno.
So you think Quickstep made a mistake today riding for Bennett? Yeah. I think they did. I think they should have given the opportunity to Cavagnaro, Cataneo, and then maybe Seneschal if it came back to a bunch sprint. Is there anyone missing out big time, Benjamin? Roglic, like, I think people... Schachmann's a weird rider, isn't he, Benji?
Yeah, like, he is.
He's such a weird rider. Like, and this is why I was... I like Schachmann. I love the Bora guys. I think they're funny. But when I did the preview, I was like, he has no chance of winning this Paris-Nice unless something crazy happens, because he's not a better puncher than Roglic. And all these intermediate sprints where he could try and mop up seconds, like he has been allowed to get a few now that Roglic is so far in the lead. But like the bonus seconds at the end of a punchy climb is still where Roglic has a massive advantage on Schachmann. And I'm still surprised though, Benji. Benoit and Schachmann not 18th and 19th behind Van Baarle and Pierre Latour isn't a great result for guys trying to get bonus seconds.
I think the problem with Schachmann himself is that we've seen him like change the way he rides a bit. I think he has lost explosivity since 2 years ago. I think he started at Bora, went from De Koning to Bora. I'm not sure if it was called De Koning back then already. But he went to Bora and he started winning those stages in those Spanish races. I don't know. I can't remember if it's Catalonia or Basque Country, but I think he won 3 stages in a row, very similar to this one. And it was always a tiny hill at the end, and he just sprinted away in the last 800 meters and nobody could react. And I feel like that has gone away a bit. He hasn't really shown that capability anymore afterwards. And he's moved more into, I'm going to try and attempt to climb better and be able to do relatively this.
Yeah.
And yeah, it feels like he's lost a lot of his explosivity there, or perhaps the competition wasn't that great in that Spanish race. But it would surprise me if it really was a bad competition, to be honest.
Benji, where the fuck is Benoit Cosnefroy?
What is he doing? He's nowhere.
Oh yeah, actually, he probably would have got dropped in the middle of the stage with with the sprinters. No, he wouldn't have. It was a pretty easy stage because the sprinters still managed. But why is he not here? I can't believe I forgot where he is. I think Cosnefroy would have been coming top 3 in this stage minimum. Is he injured or unwell? He's doing Basque Country.
I don't know what he's doing. He should be doing Milano Sanremo and Strade Bianche and such.
His first race is Basque Country. He might have had a crash, Benji. I feel like he might have
remember.
Yeah. But anyway, I think this finish would have really suited. And I got reminded him because of what you said about Schachmann, Benji. So you think like Cosnefroy is pure puncher. He like any climb over 20 minutes, like over 15 minutes, just forget about him. But Schachmann, you're saying, is trying to be like medium mountain stage in the Tour de France, like Hirschi, but then you think that he's lost his punch, whereas, yeah, he used to have that really good punch in the last 800 meters. But still a pretty nice stage from Paris-Nice, actually. It was better than the stage yesterday. Roglic in the absolute driver's seat on GC. Forgot to mention Brandon McNulty crashed and had to abandon.
Yep.
Real shame. Like this, to be honest, Benji, we've learned nothing in this Paris-Nice. Sam Bennett's way better than all the other sprinters, and we already knew that before the race. Roglic is way better than all the other GC contenders, and his main competition has crashed out. I wanted to see whether Ineos would pick Port or Gegenhardt, or how they would do with that and be aggressive. Unfortunately, both of them are crashed out. I want to see Port, I think, would have been... Yeah, I just want to see how they go. I want to see how Gegenhardt, McNulty would have gone on the long climb tomorrow. And we obviously don't know anymore. So, like, what's supposed to happen tomorrow, Benji? Like, well, Vlasov and Izagirre are supposed to attack Roglic on La Colmienne. I don't see it happening. So Roglic got a 41-second lead on GC on Schachmann, 50-second on Jon Izagirre, and 51 on Vlasov. I think everyone else is fighting for they're going to fight for their podium spots tomorrow, Benji. And I don't blame them, really. 120K stage. They've changed the route a little bit, but still the finish is the same. 16.2K, 6.2% climb, and Primoz Roglic is going to win. So, yeah, do you think they're going to ride for GC? Am I being too cynical, Benji? Or do you think something can happen to usurp Roglic?
I think there are people that are going to try and attack Roglic or do something about it. It's still Paris-Nice. It's not the tour where they are super defending their second off that spot, but I still think there's nothing you can do about it. He's going to be more isolated. We've seen that before in this Paris-Nice, that he's not that surrounded. He doesn't have a Van Aert or something.
Kruijswijk could be better tomorrow.
Kruijswijk and Bennett will likely... it fits Kruijswijk, this climb. It's not really the steep section. It's like a steady gradient, so that should work. Bennett should always also be good on this, yeah. I don't see anybody being able to beat your boy Roglic here, but I somehow hope that Vlasov accidentally gets a bit of a 20-second lead on the climb, and then it's a 1v1 battle, and then it's going to be fun.
I'm going to go with Roglic, obviously his favorite. Lutsenko. Lutsenko, I think he's back-to-back. He's strong in back-to-back breaks in the UAE Tour. Lutsenko in the break I'll be looking out for. He's a good chance. Han van Hocker, don't know how much time he's lost. If he hasn't lost a lot of time to get in a break with Lutsenko, I wish he had. But yeah, Roglic the favorite out of the GC group. Hopefully there's a break. But that's our Paris-Nice recap. Now moving on to Tirreno Adriatico, which was a bit of a sleepy stage for the majority of it. 221 Ks, a really long one. Monteciano to Gualdo Tadino, over 3,000 meters climbing, just a lot of rollers, but no extended climbs except the Poggio della Croce, 4.5 Ks at 7.5%, about 130 Ks into the stage. The final was kind of an uphill drag, just a nasty uphill drag that riders afterwards said was harder than they expected, with a left-hand turn with about 250-300 meters to go, maybe a bit less. And I think the second to last kilometer was about 3% gradient. It was a bit flatter in the last K, but how did this stage play out, Benji, for the first two-thirds of it?
So we had a breakaway, like always. Marc Padun, Mattia Bais, we had Tobias Ludvigsson, Guillaume Bovin, Niki Terpstra. Of those, Padun was the rider that, for me, seemed to be the strongest in the breakaway. And he's also the rider that was with Narváez in that Giro stage that Narváez won, but Padun punctured in the last descent and wasn't able to fight for a stage, so that was unfortunate. But he tried again today in Tirreno. Break, meh. It got a huge gap for a bit, 9 minutes, I think, with 100k into the race, so they certainly let them go for a tiny bit, but then it started gradually being climbed back.
Bernal, MVDP came to the front with like 100k's to go with Bernal and Alaphilippe, and they're like, yeah, let's create a split. They just can't help themselves. They're just addicted to racing action at the moment. And it caused Ewan to be dropped.
Exactly, and the thing about Ewan is usually he's not terrible at crosswinds, I dare to say. Sometimes he's inconsistent in them, which...
He was good at UAE.
Always useful. Yeah, at UAE he was good at them. But the issue here at hand is that he also dropped from the latter groups and he started riding alone at the end of the race. And when you're in that situation, you're basically fucked, because try and get in the time at that point. If you're
100k TT, people on a Sanremo training.
So he said, fuck it, I'm going to jump in the car. And he's driving home in the car tonight. So
I think he might have felt unwell. I don't know. Like it was a little bit, the pace wasn't super hard, but then again, it didn't surprise. He was third in the betting for this stage, Benji, and I have to say, I went pretty heavily against it. When I see the number, apart from Milano Sanremo, where I still don't, I know he came second, but that was in a different era before the new world of Van der Poel, Alaphilippe, and Wout van Aert. Yeah, didn't really like him for today's stage, but still getting dropped that early, I didn't expect that either. Jumbo Visma, they said, we're not chasing anymore. The gap went down to 3 minutes, and they're like, no, we're not doing this all on our own, because Alpecin and Quickstep weren't helping. And then the gap went out to 6 minutes, and then eventually Alpecin and De Koenig started to help them, because I think they were leaning on them being like, well, you got the leader's jersey, so why don't you chase, even though we got Ballerini and Mathieu van der Poel and Alaphilippe. And I think that was good from Jumbo-Visma. They're like, well, it's 10 bonus seconds, but whatever. It's your stage that you might want to win as well. But yeah, sorry, when did they get caught, Benji, the breakaway?
Well, I don't know the exact kilometer, but they got caught. And we were leading with the peloton towards a finish. And obviously, the three teams that you just mentioned were Alaphilippe's team, De Koninck, Van Aert's team, Jumbo, and Van der Poel's team, Alpecin, at the front. I personally thought that Alaphilippe was not going to be the person that they would be riding for today. You thought it as well yesterday. I think Ballerini was the name you named as well for the stage, next to the two people that we also kind of expected here, which were Van der Poel and Van Aert. So it was looking like it was going to happen the way we kind of expected it to, the peloton going towards the final climb. But unfortunately, just before that final section, we had a pretty serious crash on the left side of the road, including the likes of Desfazion, Kung, Simmons, Os. Simmons once again, pretty unlucky when it comes to the crashes. An Aolo Cometa rider ahead of him seemed to slide onto the floor. And yeah, it didn't look too great for the Aolo rider, so I hope he's pretty fine. Some people made a mistake going into the final climbing section. I think with a good 1 kilometer to go, we had the third lead out of De Koninck moving to the front. I think it was Stibar that was heading to the front and taking the front once they went on to the climbing section with a good 1,200 meters to go or something. We noticed just beforehand that Van der Poel was like in 20th wheel once again, and then 100 meters later, he was in 5th wheel. So teleportation skills likely actually there.
He was so deep. He was so far back. It was like 1,500 meters to go on this climb. And there was a narrow road too. And then it changed to a front-end shot, and he's suddenly there. And everyone was like, excuse me, where did you come from on Wout van Aert's wheel? How many people did Wout van Aert have? He only really had Timo Roosen. He only had one lead-out man from like 1,300, right?
Yes. Timo Roosen was moving on the front. On the left side of the road, Van der Poel made that teleportation move into the wheel, basically, of Van Aert there. I think that Ballerini and Alaphilippe were both at the front together with Stibar, like we just mentioned. Stibar moving to the front into the last corner, really, and basically taking that corner onto the climbing section, which really started kicking up right now with Alaphilippe in second wheel and Ballerini not in third wheel. And he made a mistake in the last corner because Van Avermaet was moving up on the right, and he gave his third spot away to Van Avermaet. And Ballerini was not in the wheel of Alaphilippe there. And that made a huge difference for the last kilometer, because after a good 200 meters into that final kilometer, Alaphilippe looked behind into a rightwards bend, and he noticed, well, Ballerini's not in my wheel. He's two wheels behind. So Stibar's ahead of me. Van Avermaet is in my wheel. Van Aert and Van der Poel are behind Ballerini. How can I handle this? And he has a genius idea of basically soft pedaling, allowing Stibar to create a gap ahead of him, and basically allows Stibar to take that gap onto the others and try and force others to take over and force those others to close the gap to spend their energy. Who could do that? Van Avermaet, Van Aert, or Van der Poel? Ballerini's not going to do it because Stibar's at the front. And also Alaphilippe's not going to do it because he just opened the gap to Stibar. So it would be stupid to do it himself. And there was one rider that reacted to that, and that's Wout van Aert. I don't know. I'm not sure whether it's really a mistake to react to that. Somebody had to do it, and I think van Aert is the more impulsive person to do it. Van der Poel would also do it, but I think Van der Poel...
Van der Poel was kind of boxed in. While van Aert had the clearer lane to the left-hand side, Van der Poel was kind of mid-pack and only then had space to follow Wout van Aert to the left. I think leader's jersey on his shoulders. He wants the bonus seconds ahead of Pogacar and co. Maybe he thought he could gap them off his wheel. I mean, it's tough, Benji. And that's why it's such a good move from Alaphilippe. But yeah, what happened then?
Van Aert decided to close the gap on Stibar. He did it not really at the fullest pace. He kept in mind that he had to sprint afterwards, so was closing it down with that idea in mind. Van der Poel decided to directly jump onto Van Aert's wheel. He was getting a lead out from Van Aert, basically, which is amazing. And then the other people behind started mingling about a bit. And that, I think, is also an issue for Ballerini here, because Ballerini had Alaphilippe, who came from the front, move back, and Van Avermaet was still ahead of Ballerini. And he had to make a decision. Either Ballerini stays in the wheel of Van Avermaet, which is not ideal, either he tries to stay in the wheel of Alaphilippe and hopes that Alaphilippe gives him a lead out, which is also not ideal, but it's perhaps the better decision. Or he can go around Alaphilippe and go onto the wheel of Van der Poel And I think that would have been the wisest decision, but he decided to go with the second decision and stay in Alaphilippe's wheel. And I don't think Alaphilippe recognized that directly. And I don't think Alaphilippe immediately thought, oh shit, I need to do a lead out now. And he looked behind and then he started to realize, okay, I need to get back on the wheel of the likes of Vanderpool and Van Aert here. And Van Aert was closing down the gap to Stibar, flew past him in the last section. Vanderpool started sprinting on the right of Van Aert and they started doing that 1v1 basically. And it's the same kind of sprint that we see in the Tour of Flanders in a bit of a similar way, because Van Aert is kind of forced to not go all out and doesn't have an all-out speed into the last section, which allows Vanderpool, a rider with more acceleration in the sprint. The initial boost in the sprint is always on Vanderpool's side. And yeah, it gave him so much more energy to fly past Van Aert there. I think Van Aert also spent a lot of energy catching Stibar there. And that is how Vanderpool won the race today.
Alaphilippe ended up coming 34th. I think he was really decelerating through that corner. I think Alaphilippe assumed that Ballerini had jumped onto Vanderpool,
I think so as well,
or Igita, and wasn't really doing a proper lead out at that point. And then Ballerini was sitting behind him. Oh shit, I got to jump now. And he had to, by that point, it was too late. I think two things obviously really counted for Vanderpool in this, as Benji already alluded to. The left-hand corner caused them to slow down, and then it's an accelerative sprint that suits Vanderpool more, going from a lower speed. Secondly, obviously, Van Aert having to do a lot of work in the last 500 metres, closing down Stibar, getting a full draft off him is just ideal. And when I saw Van Aert closing it, I was like, you can't win. Like you literally can't win the stage with Vanderpool on your wheel. Your level is too similar that there's no chance. And Ree Quickstep losing the wheel, as you'll remember, Benji, obviously, and everyone listening, you know, stage six of Vuelta a San Juan Internacional in 2020, 174K stage, finishing in the Autodromo El Villacum. Quickstep lost the wheel of Stibar in the last kilometer in a kind of uphill undulating finish, and he ended up winning that stage. We've seen them do it with Stibar before.
Yeah.
Do you think... Like, I feel like Alaphilippe had no confidence in Ballerini today, honestly. As weird as that sounds, I feel like he wasn't comfortable. Because at that point, Benji, they could have just done a normal lead-out for Ballerini and seen if he was better able to beat Wout van Aert and Van der Poel heads up. Like, Stibar would have led them through to the last corner, that left-hander. Alaphilippe would have kicked out of the left-hander, and Ballerini... Yeah, would have had the chance to win, or could have sprinted from there. Was the problem, you think, that he'd somehow lost Alaphilippe's wheel?
Yeah, I think that's the initial problem, and that's the initial reason why Alaphilippe also made a decision to actually open up the gap. He looked behind, and directly afterwards, he decided to let Stibar go.
True.
So I really think that the reason that Ballerini did not get a lead out today by Alaphilippe there in the way that it was supposed to be done is because Van Avermaet was able to take the wheel of Alaphilippe going into the climbing section in the last kilometer. And I think that's the old deciding factor. I think Ballerini made mistakes. I think Alaphilippe made some mistakes, perhaps. I think that Ballerini's insight today, perhaps, was a bit of an issue. And I think that's because Alaphilippe probably didn't realize he had to do a lead out still for Ballerini. Ballerini should have realized that that's a possibility that Alaphilippe would think that. And instead, he decided to stay on Alaphilippe's wheel for a bit. And there, he lost positions. Higita was able to get past him. Like, it's a tiny dude. Come on.
Yeah. I think this stage will go down in my memory for a long time because of Mathieu van der Poel's post-up before the line. He's come past Wout van Aert, who's dead. Van der Poel crosses his hands, mean mugs. It's going to be an iconic image, I think. And he was mad after losing the stage yesterday or whatever it was. Yesterday that he thought he should have won. He's out of position. Wout van Aert won the first stage, Alaphilippe the second stage, Van der Poel the third stage, Van Aert second, Ballerini third, Igita fourth, Van Avermaet fifth, Jasper de Boist sixth, Benji, with no Ewan there, sprinted for himself, even Garcia Cortina seventh after crashing, he had road rash all on his right thigh today, Tadej Pogacar still up there, eighth, Gonzalo Serrano ninth, and Hugo Hofstetter tenth. I just want to see where Bernal is on. It looks spongy, like Bernal, Sivakov, and Thomas all lost about 30 seconds or 25 seconds today. They've dropped down GC quite a bit, maybe less than that, 12 to 15 seconds. So Bernal is now on 38,
yeah.
Sivakov 37, Thomas 39.
That's not ideal.
Yeah, that's not good going into Prato di Tivo, which is tomorrow's stage, the proper mountain test. This Tirreno Adriatico is just ridiculous. It's so good. 148K no, it's stage. It's one of the, it's, this is one of the best one week races I've ever seen. It. We're three stages in. And I can't wait for tomorrow. 148K is from Terni to Prati di Tivo. I keep calling it Prato di Tivo. Prati di Tivo. Two all category climbs. One's the first one's not actually so hard. They got a roll 7.6Ks at 5%. At about 62Ks in. Then they do the Passo Capanelle, 13.8Ks at 4.5%. I don't think that will particularly worry Wout van Aert or Van der Poel, and I don't expect any attacks there with a long, what is that? Like a 25-kilometer descent afterwards. And then the big test, which I cannot wait to see, 14.5Ks at 7%, the climb tomorrow, perfectly regular, gradient as well. It's between 6 and 7 just about for the entirety of 1K at 8. But yeah, very, very regular climb. Same with the Passo Capanelle. What do you think is going to happen, Benji? Because I don't think Pogacar has the train to set things up. So I think Pogacar is going to have to rely on other teams doing it for him. Maybe he got lucky with Bernal losing so much time.
I have no issue. Like, any of his grenadiers are there. They're going to do the train for him this time around. They're going to do what Jumbo did in the Tour de France and basically cause him to have a perfect lead out into the last section. I think the only surprise that Ineos can make is if they play tactically on the final climb, if they isolate Pogacar and then decide to play with Sivakov, Thomas and Bernal. That could be really interesting, because if they just do a three-man train and do stuff like that, then it's going to end with Pogacar not losing time that day. So they got to play it very special to try and make something happen. They've got the team to explode stuff, but the fact that he lost time today,
maybe they just got, I mean, they all caught up with a crash at a bad time. No 3 kilometer yeah. rule outside the 3Ks. It was at like 3.3Ks. What can you do, I guess?
Was Bernal, yeah, Bernal in the crash? I swear I saw Bernal standing at the side of the road at some point.
Yeah, he was in the crash, so I feel like they just got really unlucky.
Yeah,
They were in weird position.
Yeah, usually Ineos is the team that is able to stay at the front of the peloton, keeping themselves from harm. And right now they were not really in the position that they usually do that. So perhaps a bit of nonchalance going into the last section, not being in a position where you can be safe from crashes happening behind you. But I don't really think we can blame them then if they lost the time because of the crash. And I think we'll see fireworks tomorrow. I hope so. And I expect it. Do you think Van Aert...
I know everyone likes Filippo Ganna, but he ain't no Luke Rowe yet. That's for sure. He did one nice pull in the UAE into the last 1,500 meters, which not as helpful because it's already past the 3-game mark. But yeah, I've not seen Ganna consistently getting on the front, keeping Bernal and co safe in these latter ends of these stages. So yeah. Something he might need to look at as well, and something he should theoretically be good at. But yeah, shame that Thomas, Bernal, and Sivakov lost time. Sorry, you were going to ask me a question.
Yes, Van Aert, Prato di Tivo, what do you expect?
Oh, I don't know. Nah, he looks... I was looking at photos of the Tour de France last year, you know, just wistfully on my wall, and he does look very different. Like, he does look in cobbled shape at the moment. Like, he was very, very skinny then. That was when he was climbing really well. And 14.7Ks at 7%. Simon Yates here. Who knows what Simon Yates will bring? I'm not actually expecting too much.
He'll drop himself again. I can feel
it. I don't see it. And you know the problem, Benji, is that the Jumbo-Visma don't have anyone to pace for Van Aert. Like, there's no Koos here. What, Foss maybe? Foss and Hesink? Hesink hasn't looked in great form. Like, they don't really have the team to support him either. So, yeah. Who are you picking? What do you think? You think he's going to lose? But how much time would he lose? 30? 40?
53 seconds.
That means he's still right up there on GC, though. If he loses 53 seconds, then he'll still be, you know,
I believe he'll top 10, Tirreno.
Yeah, that's probably, I mean, I'd say that's a good shout at this point, given that TiVo is the main test. What is he? Lander. I think Bahrain will try something for Lander as well. So there'll be a lot of other teams pacing. I don't think it'll be an easy climb. What about Van der Poel, Benji?
No, I don't believe in it. I think that Van der Poel has clearly set his sights on what he wants to achieve in the season. I don't think he's in a Lombardia form in any way. I don't see it happening that he comes out on top here on this race. I think he's going to have a similar result than Van Aert, but I'm not sure he's going to try as much. I just don't know. I don't know what to expect, but
I'm betting on Alaphilippe for the stage.
It's a good take after what we saw in Provence. He was good there. I think that he was only dropped by Bernal in the last 500 meters there. So, I think it's very much possible. I'm going to go for Pogacar. I'm going to stick with the basics and be... Yeah, he's apparently a good climber.
I can't wait to see this stage tomorrow for Tirreno Adriatico. Now moving on to the Healthy Aging Tour, stages 2 and 3. Stage 2 was the individual time trial, 14.5 kilometers from Lauwersoog to Lauwersoog. What an unusual name. In the north of Holland, the weather was apparently biblical. Like, the wind was absurd. And it wasn't safe to ride the TT at the projected start time, which is actually normally a good time for me, 9 p.m. In the evening where I am. But it got pushed back to like 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock local time, and just didn't work for us time zones, because that's 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning for me. And the wind was still really strong when they did it. They all had to race it on road bikes, which is pretty terrifying. 14K, absolutely pancake flat course. And contenders for the stage were Lisa Klein, Brennauer, Peters, Norsgaard, Ellen van Dijk, of course. And, I mean, I'll do it how we normally do TTs, Benji. Ellen van Dijk won, time of 20:53, average speed of 41:37, 26 seconds out of Peters. Van Dijk on Trek Segafredo, Peters on SD Works. Two Dutch women, Lisa Brennauer, third for Sarah Tizit, 30 seconds back. Emma Norsgaard showing, I thought she might get a top three, but it's fourth, still good, 36 seconds back. Lisa Klein, fifth. Just Jocelyn Loudon, Benji, for Drops Le Col, 43 seconds back. I think she's the rider that set the unofficial hour record in that controversial British cycling pre-Olympics testing. No, seriously, but yeah. I've got to fact check that. But I think the commentary with was it McCrossan said that today. He and Danny Rowe are very, very good on the women's races. But Alice Barnes, seventh. Twenty Bequi. Becky for Jumbo-Visma women, a minute two back. Anna Henderson ninth, and Danijke Hengeveld, who came eighth yesterday in that on stage one after that break, 10th. So Ellen van Dijk striking out in the TT. Anything surprise you about that, Benji? Norsgaard, obviously, is she, like, are you surprised by her being that far up there with van Dijk, Peters, and Brennauer?
I think Norsgaard is starting to be one of the breakthroughs of the season, certainly. And she's showing every single race that she rides now that she's very, very strong. And she also was already decent at time trial, but she confirmed it once again. I think Ellen van Dijk was the ungodly favorite pretty much for this entire tour, knowing that she's won it 3 times in a row beforehand. And this is the 4th time that she was in a position already after stage one to potentially take it home in the end if she did well on the second and third stage, the second being a time trial. So it fits her to the bone. And what was special about this time trial too for me is that the earliest riders had so much wind, and the wind started dropping towards a time where the likes of a Norsgaard and a van Dijk had to ride. So the initial riders perhaps had a bit of a bad luck, serious bad luck, I'd say, when it comes to the weather difference, kind of like the first men's Giro stage of last year. Very similar in the same sense that the weather changed throughout the race. And I do not think that it changed the winner here, because Van Dijk was just dominant above the rest. She does what she does best on this terrain. We were looking at the likes of a Brennauer, perhaps, at a Bond to try and protect her placing in GC. Dora, I didn't really believe in personally. I don't think she's a great TTR, and I think she lost 2 minutes indeed in the end. Yeah. So not a good time trial, but also not really expected to have a good time trial. I think this time trial just had the winner that was written down for it. We tried to go for some outsiders once we tried predicting the stage a few days ago. I think you actually said you could see Norsgaard winning this. So she came very close in the time trial as well. She proved once again she's up there. And yeah, that's basically it. I think Brennauer was top three as well. Let me check to be sure, because I'm just going off the top of my head right now. Yes, she was second. So that was a top three for certain.
So going into stage three, the GC, Ellen van Dijk leading, 23 seconds ahead of Amy Peters. So a bit of unusual territory for SD Works, not being in the leaders going into in any race, really. Lisa Brennauer third on 25, Norsgaard fourth on 33, Klein fifth on 39. Other SD Works riders, Majerus, Luxembourg national champ at 1 minute 17, as well as Caroline Canwell at 1:48 and Lonika Unikin at 1:59. This stage three parcours from, is it Vista or Weister, Benji? How do you say it?
Weister.
Weister.
Yes.
Weister.
And okay, what's special and, about this parcours?
It's on top of a waste dump.
Yes.
So Weister makes sense. What is the history of this special course, Benji?
It's a bit of a funny story, actually, because, you know, the Netherlands, it's a pretty flat country. Not too many hills in it, no climbs. It's very difficult for someone like a Tom Dumoulin or a Kruiswijk or even a Kelderman to become Dutch national champion on the road. Van der Poel, yeah, he has a bit of a combination there with sprinting and hilling, so he can do both, really. Usually it was always or relatively always a either sprinty or relatively hilly parkour, and that brought forward the likes of a Groenewegen or Jakobsen winning those races and singled on once, but let's not think about that moment anymore. Anyway, they had to create something to make sure the climbers could also have an opportunity. They decided to see, oh, there's a waste dump, let's make a hill out of it. And that's how the Vomberg was created. And the Vomberg, which is how they pronounce it, is the climb we do 17 times, or the women did 17 times in this stage, which is crazy. It's not the steepest or the biggest climb, but if you do it 17 times, it's going to hurt. And that's really the key to this entire story. It's a very difficult race because of the consecutive climbing round circuits you get. 400 meters of 5.8%. There's a bit of cobbles on it. I can't tell you if it's like very difficult cobbles or anything.
Apparently they're quite nasty.
Yeah?
Yeah, apparently. Apparently they're like nastier than the actual cobbles that are normally in the area.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You're the cobble expert though.
Yeah, I haven't went to analyze on site yet, so I can't tell you the quality of cobbles that they have in the Netherlands. But the Flemish cobbles are obviously much better. I can tell you that with full confidence. Anyway, today's stage would be a bit of a war of attrition, I was expecting, really. So a lot of perhaps one women army attacks at certain points to try and blow stuff up. And I think we saw that throughout the entire race, right? Because, like, it wasn't really that you had the breakaway, then everybody gets caught, and then on the last hill they attack. It's war throughout.
No, when live coverage started, there was a group of 30 and a break of 4. Everyone was, like, perished. It was like the nastiest race ever. And I said to Benji, I'm like, the title of this needs to be not the healthy aging tour, it's the unhealthy will age you tour. Because it was like
terrible joke.
-3 degrees. Go and look at their Twitter. Go and look at the finish line photos and stuff. Fuck me. Like, it's got to be so cold, rainy. If any of y'all think I'm moving to the Netherlands or Belgium when I move to Europe, you're out of your goddamn mind. But anyway. When we joined live coverage, it was about 46 k's to go. There was a bunch of 45 riders, a minute behind the breakaway. The breakaway was five riders, Julien Dor and Lonneke Unikin, who both have SD Works. They were both like 2 minutes behind on GC, so they put in their like quote-unquote weaker GC threats, SD Works, into the break. Anna Henderson of Jumbo Visma, Loretta Hansen for Trek Segafredo, and Emma Norsgaard for Movistar. They had a gap of like 47 seconds. And pretty weird, Benji, because Loretta Hansen in the break, but Ellen van Dijk in the leader's jersey on Trek having to pace back to that break.
Yeah, not ideal, is it? Because usually you've got the situation where you try and encircle your leader with as many teammates as possible so that she can keep the gap under control to the front of the reins, but you're basically spending energy. And I think the idea behind it could be that they're saying, oh, let's put her in a seat behind, but that's not really how you race as a leader, I would expect. So yeah, a bit of a weird situation. Perhaps she got into that by accident, and they wanted to keep both the GC and the stage win on the table as potential stuff to happen. But I still think it's weird. I think that, yeah, I think they could have played it more defensively. And if it did anything or not, we'll see at the end of our little exploratory story here. But I think that that group, yeah, it like
they got pulled back, I think, or yeah. A few of them got dropped out of it. 25 to go, they had like a 23-second lead. I think Carol and Canuel had bridged across as well. To that group. So still two SD Works riders. Julien Dor was like dropping every climb, every ascent more and more, and then she eventually dropped out of that group. SD Works not happy with, I guess they just want to put more pressure on Ellen van Dijk. So they attacked with Majerus, who was also like a minute 17 back on GC. So they like held her back because she was not as far back on GC. Then she attacked with Lisa Brenau, German, on Theratizit. They were like 23 seconds back. And then it was Lonneke Unikin who went clear of the breakaway, the young Dutch rider on SD Works. Apparently there's a little bit of hype about her. She had a minute 16 on the bunch with 18Ks to go. And eventually Ellen van Dijk tried to bridge across to Brenauer. Who was the Canyon SRAM rider, Benji, who kept trying to bridge solo?
Lisa Klein.
Canyon SRAM rider. Pardon?
Lisa Klein.
Yeah, I think she cost herself today, working too much solo. She could have followed more moves, and she tried to do it all herself when if she's a bit more patient, SD Works and it inevitably would have done it for her. So, eight chases with Ellen van Dijk, Peters, Brenauer, Klein, I think as well, maybe Barnes as well, 1:16 gap. And then this is where it started to get really, really exciting. Lonneke Unikin's clear, 2 minutes back on GC. Ellen van Dijk has no teammates, and SD Works were at the front. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And the time gap was going down. So it looked like they were chasing their own teammate. But when you looked at what they were doing, they were barely pedaling. So like, at what point did you realize the time gaps were lying to us?
I think I don't know how many kilometers ago, but they came into just before the final lap. And this means that you're basically just before the ascension to the Vambery, because that's the end of each lap. And they go on to this section where it's like a bit of a sideways eight, an infinity symbol, the road, the parkour. And while the group and the person that was trying to bridge, I think it was Lisa Klein at that moment, was starting the entire eight symbol to the right. So she had to go the entire way around to then go down again and then go to the left. We already saw that at the finish line, she was already passing Lonneke Unikin. And we saw when that group started that symbol, the infinity symbol, it's very difficult to understand. Okay, I know. It's not my easiest explanation, but basically we saw at that point that while they were doing the right section. She was already doing the left section, which means that it must have been more than a minute and a half. And then suddenly, boom, the time gap showed up when they crossed the finish line. And why did it show up there? Because that's where they really calculated the seconds between the groups on this terrain. They don't have the best budget in this race, and that is the way they decided to do it for most of the situation, it seems. And that is where they knew for clear that the gap between the two groups, between Lonneke Unniken, Lisa Klein, was 2 minutes 31, which means there was another half a minute to the actual group behind Lisa Klein, which is 3 minutes. And at that point, you're starting to think, oh boy, Ellen van Dijk, this is a very difficult moment for you, because now you're virtually losing your lead in GC to Lonneke Unniken at the start of the race. So she had to crawl back from that point onwards. And I think that's also the moment that we started deteriorating or seeing deterioration in what Lonneke Unniken was doing at the front of the race. Every single time the road went up from that point, she started having trouble.
That was the problem. So both SG Works riders, the rider Unniken in the lead, was getting more tired, understandably. She'd already been in the breakaway before.
Yeah.
At like 45 k's to go. But Amy Peters, who was 23 seconds back on Ellen van Dijk, who was, you know, quote unquote, supposed to be getting a free ride, whilst Lisa Klein, Brennauer, and van Dijk had to pace, she was also getting, like, dropping a little bit every ascent of the Col du Vin. And we eventually saw, we knew it was going to be a really close run thing, because it got brought back to 2 minutes with 6 k's to go. I think there's bonus seconds on the line for the stage winner. We knew, obviously, that Unniken, unless she fell off her bike, was going to win the stage. It was just whether she could win by a minute 49 or more. And I think she got caught in the crossfire a little bit, because Norsgaard Benji started to pace pretty hard, as well as Brennauer. I think they were kind of attacking each other on GC, to be honest, and Norsgaard was trying to move up on general classification. And eventually Unniken crossed. So Unniken, like, crawls across the line. We've seen the back. Peters, I was like, oh, well, Unniken's probably not going to win GC if it keeps going this way. Surely the plan is for Peters to attack, but she couldn't. Like, so, yeah, that was the main problem, and the flaw in the SD Works plan. That was pretty good one. Norsgaard then surges really hard up to the last ascent with Brennauer on her wheel, drops van Dijk, Klein, Peters, and yeah, she comes second on the stage, a minute 14 back with Brennauer on her wheel, and then we're waiting for the clock to tick, and it's ticking, 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 and eventually Ellen van Dijk holds on, finishing a minute 29 back on Lonneke Unniken, holding it. Even though she'd been dropped and isolated, she was able to just limit her losses and hold on to GC. I couldn't believe it. Van Dijk, 6 seconds ahead of Brennauer and 12 seconds ahead of Norsgaard third. Unniken, 20 seconds back in fourth. But yeah, what an exciting finish, Benji. One of the most exciting women's races I've seen recently, and it didn't have some of the big names here.
Yeah, I think that is the beauty of cycling for me as well. We see, for one of the first times, we don't see this often, the continental races, or we call it continental races, but the sub-World Tour races, the ones that are not in the World Tour classification, those are the ones where sometimes the best racing is formed, because you don't know who is the all-out favorite. Let's look at Tirreno Adriatico with the men's edition now. You know for each of the first three stages which of the, well, who are the top four in the stage, and that's something you don't have in this situation, because it can come from so many different places. And you can have a youngster that overperforms in a very, very beautiful way. Like we had today, Lonneke Unniken. She's 21 and she's showing our colors that she can do this stuff in the future. SD Works has a valuable, valuable rider in that. And it's also her first victory, if I recall correctly, her first pro win. So definitely, yeah. Definitely showing off, I'd say, and definitely showing that she deserves that spot in the team, which is a very, very loaded team already. So that's great stuff. And we also see the likes of a Daniek Hengeveld a few days ago, I think yesterday in the time trial as well, with a top 10 placing. She also performed very well on the first two stages. She died out on the third one, but can't blame her. She's super young. showed herself. She's going to get a proper contract, I think, very, very soon. I think that we're going to see from these kind of races, talent grow up and talent move into World Tour. And I love that. And I wish that perhaps the World Tour circuit with the women's races was a bit bigger, that there were more teams in there. The likes of Ayumbo deserves that spot, in my opinion. I think that there's quite a number of a few Conti teams that would deserve a spot in the World Tour circuit, I'd say. But it's probably more of a financial question than anything UCI-wise.
And yeah, we really wanted to cover this race, even though we only cover normally World Tour or Women's World Tour races. We obviously didn't cover the Samin or La Guelia or GP Industria or Kerner. But we had a lot of the World Tour teams here. It's one of the only women's stage races on for quite a while. And
exactly.
It was super exciting. Yeah.
I think that one of the reasons that we want to cover it that much is because there's so limited coverage of women's cycling that this is just something that we can do. And this is going to sound stupid, but...
And we could watch it.
Yeah, certainly. That's the most important part here. Otherwise, we would have a difficulty explaining what happened, really. So, yeah, that would have been awkward. But the first stage of Tirreno, I think it was the fourth or third stage of Paris-Nice was on that day. And it was also the first stage of Healthy Aging Tour. And somehow I was more hyped about the Healthy Aging Tour than the first stage of Tirreno and that Paris-Nice stage on the day, which is heresy for a lot of people. But it's just because sometimes
Paris-Nice ITT. The Tirreno stage, I grant you, but Paris-Nice ITT, come on. But yeah, I take your point. Like, I was pretty excited for today's stage in particular. I couldn't wait to see this because I didn't catch the Netherlands National Championship last year. Even though the result looks predictable, Ellen van Dijk taking out a fourth GC at this race. But certainly, this, if you want to catch an hour of racing that is really exciting, because Paris-Nice and Tirreno, you could probably catch the finales, but if you want to catch the last hour of racing, a full hour of exciting, really tough attritional racing, then Healthy Aging Tour Stage 3 is a pretty good one. I think it's on Eurosport GCN or Podium TV or wherever. I don't know. You'll figure it out wherever you are in the world. But that's our recap today of Healthy Aging Tour Stage 3 and the GC, as well as Paris-Nice Stage 6 and Tirreno Adriatico Stage 3. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of just the two men's races that are on Saturday. And yeah, that's all. I'm pretty buckled, Benji. It's now 3:15 in the morning. I'm going to get to sleep. And sweet dreams for Ilnur Zakarin winning tomorrow. Ciao.